This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's the Kevin Sheehan Show. Denton Day sitting in for Kevin on the Team 980. You can find me on Twitter at TheDentonDay. If you're not subscribed to our YouTube channel, go ahead and do that. You see this program live 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. every Monday through Friday. Then you get Craig Hoffman 4 to 7. You get some Denton's Office mixed in between there as well. You know that this is the program that loves itself some college football. Myself and Kevin each love it. I know Max is a college football guy as well. So let's talk some college football. Shehan Jeyaraja from CBS Sports is kind enough to give us a few moments here on a Thursday. Shehan, always good to catch up, my friend. It has been a busy and hectic offseason, I'm sure, to put it lightly, but how are you?
I'm doing great. Yeah, I appreciate you having me back on.
So let's talk about the biggest news, at least so far, of the offseason, the adjustment to the seeding in the college football playoff. It felt like it was going to happen eventually. We just didn't know when. What do you think of straight seeding the 12 teams?
Yeah, I think it's probably the right decision. And look, I was somebody who was as vocal as anybody about the fact that I wanted to make sure that there were real serious rewards for conference championships. And certainly that was the case last year. I'd argue that we had the best conference championship weekend that we've had in a very long time. But I do think at the same time, once we actually got into the playoff, it was kind of obvious. We had an unbalanced bracket. Of course, the teams 5 through 8 all beat the teams 1 through 4. They obviously were also rewarded with home playoff games that the conference champions were not. So I do think that ultimately it does make sense to move to a straight seeding model. Last year, of course, the top 4 teams would have all been from the Big Ten and the SEC. But I do think that it was a little bit of an anomalous year from that perspective. I mean, I look even into 2025, I expect Clemson to be in that conversation. I think Miami could easily get into that conversation. Maybe you have a Big 12 team jump up. But I do think that ultimately it's the right decision, and it'll make for the most, not just the best product possible, but I think also the fairest bracket possible.
Do you think this decision was done more for some of the things that you just relayed, or was it done more for some of the things that the Boise State athletic director relayed on Twitter, which is just to punish the small guy?
Yeah, I mean, and it's a great question, right? I mean, I think that it's a combination of the two. I mean, look, the reality is we had the first round of playoff games over the course of 2 days, and many of them, of course, were up against NFL games. And very few of them ended up being competitive. And so I do think that, like, that's, I think, part of it. I mean, one of the things that I think could be a benefit is, like, I think if we had done straight seeding last year, we would have gotten, like, a Boise State-Indiana playoff game, which would have been a great opportunity to showcase both those programs in a game that obviously both of them would have had the chance to win. And so I think that that's part of it. I think that, again, like, just the fact that the bracket was so unbalanced. And I think that, you know, when you're talking about, you know, the seeding, I mean, there were teams that definitely were a little more excited about being the 5 seed than the possibility of being the 1 seed. And obviously, it ended up being worst case scenario with the 1 seed Oregon having to play Ohio State, who went on to win the national title. But I do think that people felt kind of the disconnect between the top of the bracket, middle of the bracket, and lower part of the bracket. And again, we'll see how it looks in 2015. But I think that it's probably going to project as something that makes a little more sense.
Do you feel like that some of the changes that are happening a little too fast?
Well, I think that the thing that is unfortunate is just how reactionary all of this is. And some of this was always going to happen. And what I mean by that is, you know, I mean, this contract that the College Football Playoff had, it only existed for 2 more years when they did make the change to an expanded playoff. And so, you know, it means that Max, we were going to get 2 years of an unchanged system before we had to enter into a brand new contract starting with the 2026 playoff. But, you know, I think it's interesting, right? Because what if Arizona State gets a fourth down stop and all of a sudden the 4 seed beat the 5 seed and they were obviously rewarded and proved that they deserved to be there? And I think that, frankly, Boise State and Arizona State proved that they deserved to be in that conversation for a top 4 seed as well. So, no, I do think that we are being very reactionary right now. I will also say I think that that's going to be a relatively short-term thing because in 2026 we're going to have a new playoff contract that's going to extend a couple of years. And so I don't expect as many changes in that short run. The reality is with some of the, 24, 25 changes is that it's also part of negotiating for 2026 and beyond, you know, giving in maybe in some areas to compensate in other areas. So I do think that this is a temporary state of being, but I really do hope, like you kind of mentioned, that we don't just end up in this reactionary doom spiral every single year where we're trying to adjust for tiny things that really aren't that big a deal.
Shehan J. Araja, my guest here on the Kevin Sheehan Show with Dent Day sitting in for Kevin here on the Team 980. We got SEC meetings going on in Florida, and you mentioned the idea of a negotiating process coming up in the near future. Will that be a negotiation, or is that just going to be Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti telling everybody else what's going to happen?
I mean, it's essentially like been explicitly stated as that. You know, they had essentially a memorandum that they sent out last year where they said, you know, essentially the SEC and the Big Ten are going to be the ones who decide what we do moving forward. Now, I think that what's always interesting about power struggles and about monopolies is, you know, they aren't necessarily the best thing long term for the quality of your product because, you know, again, like if you're in a situation, let's just use, for example, the 4 auto bids as a proxy for this. Like you're in a situation where all of a sudden people aren't really following the playoff race because why does it actually matter if so many teams are already guaranteed to be in? Why does a conference championship race matter? Why does a late season, group kind of matter? And so I do think that some of this stuff and some of this power will end up not maybe being as valuable long term as these conferences want it to be. And again, look, here's the reality, right? Like, I think that, back in 2023, Florida State as an undefeated conference champion miss it. Like, I think people rightfully felt pretty bad about that. I don't think anybody should feel even a little bit bad about Alabama ending up as the first team out as a 3-loss team with losses to Vanderbilt and Oklahoma, who both would not have made bowl games if they didn't beat Alabama. And so, you know, I think that some of these exes are going to fall on deaf ears. And even on the auto bid situation, right? Like, I think that last year that was proposed and it was largely shot down because of backlash from fans and media and partners. And so I think that they're at real risk of overplaying some of their hands. And so it'll be kind of interesting to see in the next couple of weeks and months, I guess, ultimately, like, you know, to make a comparison, right? It's the dog catching the car. It's a, hey, you have all the power and influence that you ever wanted. Do you actually even know what you want to do with this?
You know, I'm looking at some of the stuff that we have seen from SEC media days, and whether he wants to be or not, whether he should be or not, it does feel like Lane Kiffin is somewhat influential or at least has enough of a voice to make people care about some of the things he said. And it seems like Shehan, over the course of the last couple of days, he's reunited with the love of his life. Good for him. He's reunited with sworn enemy Paul Feinbaum, and he is leading the charge for no auto bids, or at least he's been very vocal about no auto bids, no auto qualifiers. Do you think we're more likely in 2026 to get 12 teams with no auto bids or have the playoff expand to 16 teams?
Well, I think that those two things aren't necessarily tied. I think that we are very likely to move to 16 teams regardless of what the system looks like. And one reason for that actually is I think last year, right, we have the auto bids. And then on top of that, we have the buys. And all 4 teams that had buys ended up losing. And the other part of that, too, is that none of the 4 teams that got buys got the benefit of a home playoff game. And those ended up being awesome. I mean, the atmosphere is there, the energy around campus. Also, by the way, like something that really added to it was like you had Tennessee fans try to travel up to, you know, to try to take over, Ohio Stadium. I think that's great. I think that's great for the sport that people are trying to even organize things like that. So I think that 16 will allow us to have 8 home playoff games, which I think that people are, that top schools I think are really going to be excited about. So that's one piece of it. You know, when you start talking about the 5 auto bids and 11 at large, I mean, look, I think that, you mentioned Lane Kiffin has a very outsized voice. I think partially because he's willing to use it. And you look at a lot of the other coaches in the Big Ten and SEC, they really don't say a whole lot. They really don't give away a whole lot. Well, that creates a little bit of a power vacuum that Lane Kiffin can step into. But I think the other piece too is like if you're an SEC team, you know, I mean, again, it's cool the idea that, hey, we get 4 guaranteed. And look, especially coming off of a year where you only got 3 teams into the field, which is kind of crazy. Like, yeah, you know, having that baseline, I think, is one thing. But the baseline of 4, I think, is more important to the middle tier and lower tier teams in the Big Ten and SEC. For the top teams, like, I don't think that they're scared to compete. I don't think that Ole Miss is scared to try to be a top 16 team like they were last year. I don't think Alabama, Georgia are scared about trying to be a top 16 team. I think it's more South Carolina. I think it's more Kentucky. I think it's more, you know, some Missouri that would love to try to shoot for the goal of being a top 4 SEC team more than necessarily trying to be a top 16 team in the country. So I think that even in these rooms, and this is true, I'm sure, in the Big Ten as well, there's some disagreement about how to best approach it because, again, like everybody's situation is ultimately so different.
Do you think we'll see as we get closer to whatever change is coming next that more coaches will start to be a little bit more outspoken? Like it has felt like, you know, Sark has done some more interviews this offseason. Even Ryan Day, who is like, he's a mystery, it seems like, most offseasons, but he started to do more interviews. Do you think we'll see some of these coaches become maybe not quite Lane Kiffin, where they just go on like binge rage tweets, it feels like, but they'll at least start to speak more on these things?
Well, it's interesting, right? Because I think that go back 5 years and, you know, 2019, 2018, 2020, that time frame, you have these established superstar coaches. Nick Saban, right? He has the right and ability to talk. Dabo Swinney, who still is around, but obviously is not at the peak of his powers anymore. He had the right to talk. We kind of lost that whole generation. I'll even throw Jim Harbaugh into that. We kind of lost like the clear-cut top voices in college football in a very short amount of time. We obviously see this too on the basketball side with Coach K, Roy Williams, et cetera, all retiring at a similar time and kind of having this generation change. So I think that that's part of why we've seen some quiet in the past 2 to 3 years is because it's been a transitionary time. And you mentioned some of the voices who are stepping up now. I mean, Kirby Smart has been one who's been a little bit more vocal in recent years. Steve Sarkisian, like you mentioned, kind of moving into that top group. Ryan Day, now a national championship coach, moving into that top group. I think that's going to be part of it is as some of these younger coaches start to take over the sport per se, I think that we will start to see more of their voices come to the forefront. I mean, because again, you look around, let's just take the SEC for example right now. I mean, Greg Sankey right now is the most powerful voice in that room. That wasn't the case a couple years ago. It was Nick Saban. Now, Kirby Smart can elevate himself to being as powerful or more powerful a voice. I think Steve Sarkisian is heading in that direction. Like you mentioned, Lane Kiffin is willing to try to compete, but you know, again, I think that like Brian Kelly isn't necessarily somebody who has the right to be a bigger voice in that room necessarily. And so as some of these coaches have more success, as you have more coaches win national championship like Ryan Day in the Big Ten, I think it does change the dynamics and will allow some of these coaches to be a bit more vocal.
So we will circle back around to the topics at hand in terms of what the future looks like and all that sort of stuff. But I do want to ask you about the story that you wrote yesterday. We're talking with Shehan Jeyaraja, CBS Sports, CBSSports.com, covering college football. on offensive lines. I think this is fascinating. I'm in the process of reading through all of it, so I haven't gotten quite through all of it yet, but I think the concept is really, really intriguing. What did you learn when kind of compiling the data and talking with people around college football about the depth of the offensive line position across the country?
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Well, I think to preface this story is I think that offensive line play and slipping offensive line play has been one of the defining stories of football in the past 5 to 10 years. And furthermore, I think it's one of the hardest stories to try to contextualize because you can count how many yards a quarterback throws for or you know, how many times you hand the ball off. It's just harder to quantify and find empirical data on offensive line play, which I think makes it just a more complicated story. And so that was what I really set out to do this offseason, was try to sit down and see if I could figure that out a little bit. And talking to people around the sport, there's a couple pieces of this, right? The biggest one that I got into in my story over at CBSSports.com is I think that the transfer portal and NIL has impacted every position, but it's really impacted offensive linemen in a specific way. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One, I mean, it's harder to keep as many linemen as you did before. And, you know, you need one or two really good quarterbacks on your roster to be a good team. Well, you need like 8 offensive linemen to really even have a chance to have a good line, and probably more than that as well. And so just keeping that amount of players with the relative financial value of these players at this point has just never been more difficult because you have a kid go through for 1 year and maybe they're getting poached by a team who's willing to pay them just a little bit more. You know, I got a quote from Sam Pittman, who's one of the greatest offensive line coaches of all time, now the coach at Arkansas, who like was like, God dang, man, like I have kids coming into my office who played 2 games last year and I don't even know if they're good and they're getting offers from other places for a lot of money. And so I think that's one piece of it is just, you know, offensive line play is so dependent on development over multiple years. And you just really don't have the luxury of having guys for multiple years anymore and creating these good units consistently. The other piece, too, I think, is that, you know, from a literal coaching perspective, like, again, you lose the development piece and you also lose the consistency and camaraderie piece. And, you know, when you're talking about offensive line play, and again, like when you watch casually on TV, it's you don't always notice all the little details with it, but like offensive line play is all about communication and positioning. And if you don't know where the guy on your left is supposed to be, or if you don't know how to tell the guy on your right that, hey, this guy's coming from this angle, if you can't do that efficiently, then you make mistakes. And with offensive line play specifically, if you make one mistake on the offensive line, it's basically a drive killer. If a wide receiver drops a pass, you know, it's a bad play and you go on and do the next play. If an offensive lineman fails, that's a sack or a tackle for loss. And all of a sudden you're behind the sticks and it changes the entire complexion of the drive. So anyway, all this to say, I think that, you know, this is a defining issue right now in college football. And again, I think that, you know, I got a chance to talk with Miami's offensive line coach, Alex Mirabal, about it. And, you know, Miami has invested as much money, first of all, into their roster as anybody over the past couple of years, but a huge amount of their investment has gone into the offensive line position. They've had very few players relatively transfer, and I think that that's actually one of the reasons they were able to jump from a pretty good team to one that was on the edge of the playoff last year, and I think we'll continue to only rise in 2025.
It's so interesting, one of the points that you made about, you know, like the 2 games. And how many times do we hear that across every position? But a guy who's played 2 games, coming into your office, I don't know if he's good, but someone's going to pay him X amount of money. We're like 4 or 5 years into this NIL transfer portal thing, and still no coach seems to, like, have it fully mastered. It's crazy.
No, it's really, really difficult. And I mean, the thing is too, is like, I want people to understand, especially when we look back at this era of, let's say, 21 through 24, like this was the true Wild West. Like this was the true, there are no rules. You can throw any amount of money around. There's no inhibiting on transfers. There's no commitment to binding commitment to being there for a few years. Like, and I mean, God bless the kids who took advantage of it, right? There's more money being thrown around. I would guess at this point, it might be the most money that will ever be thrown around in college football, just because, again, there's no rules. And a lot of people understand, hey, maybe we can take advantage of this specific moment. But I mean, look, you look at any other sport, there just isn't a sport that has perpetual free agency. And I don't think that you can have a healthy sport where you have that. Now, you know, look, I'm around the Big 12 conference a lot because of my background in Texas. I think that the Big 12 is a conference that's starting to understand, hey, our advantage is we can use our money to retain our own players. We don't necessarily need to use it to go out and get other players to fill holes, because maybe we don't actually, maybe we won't actually benefit from doing that. And another piece of this as well is that my colleague over at CBS Sports, Chris Hummer, did a study, and you know, obviously it's a number that needs a lot of context, but top 247 kids who transferred top 247 kids who did not transfer were 5 times as likely to be drafted into the NFL as kids who did transfer. Now, again, that's a number that needs a lot of context. And, you know, obviously a kid who's not succeeding is going to transfer more than a kid who's succeeding. But it's also context that, hey, you know what? Maybe it's also bad for players long term to be in this state of perpetual movement as well.
Shay, I appreciate the time as always, man. Enjoy the rest of the off season before we get things kicked up and rolling in a couple weeks.
Thank you so much for having me.
That is Shayhan Jeyaraj, CBS Sports, covering college football at the national level. You can find him on Twitter at Shayhan Jeyaraj. His conversations are always a lot of fun. You know, we've had a lot of conversations surrounding the transfer portal and name, image, and likeness here on this program. Kevin and I feel very similar about it. It is madness. And, you know, getting to be around college coaches and people that are around college programs the way that I am, nobody has gotten this thing down. It feels like you can kind of, if you're a parent, you understand this. Maybe I shouldn't be making this reference because I'm not a parent. But it feels like you're putting out a lot of fires or you're cleaning up a lot of messes that your children make. Like, you understand if you have an infant or a toddler or a 2-year-old, 3-year-old, 4-year-old, whatever, they're going to spill things. Things are going to get thrown across the room. They're going to leave areas of the house a little messy, and it's your job to be the parent to go and clean it up. It feels like that's what college coaches are doing. You understand issues are going to arise, that people are going to come into your office, say, "Coach, so-and-so is paying me X amount of money." And whether that number is actually true, because I do think that there is a lot of guys across the country that are fabricating numbers in an effort to get money from their current establishment, thinking to themselves that if their current establishment says no, that they might actually be worth that on an open market, which very, very few times has that ever come into fruition. And coaches have talked a lot about this. But with 4 or 5 years into it, nobody has seemed to master the concept of how to behave in name, image, and likeness. And I would think that 4 to 5 years into this is a good amount of data to accumulate. Now, I'll tie that back into the problem at hand elsewhere in the sport. The college football playoff is changing way too rapidly. If we have 4 to 5 years of data surrounding name, image, and likeness, transfer portal, and how coaches can kind of operate in that, we're making drastic changes to the sport and just the overall hierarchy of the sport with a year. We've had like 6 playoff games in the 12-team, or like, what was it? I guess it was 8 if you count the numbers down. We had like 8 playoff games in the 12-team model, and we're already making big adjustments. Now, I think it's fair to suggest that the straight seeding was going to happen eventually, but then some of the other changes that are on the horizon, no auto bids, expanding the postseason, you're making a lot of drastic changes very, very quickly before you actually get to see the ins and outs. 8 games is not enough to get an idea for what the future is going to look like. You need more information. I didn't mind staying at 4 for as long as they stayed at 4 in the college football playoff model, because you knew this is what you're trying out. And then eventually when that contract is done, you will then expand. I thought it would be to 8. They decided to go to 12. But they did that over 8 years. They did it 2 years short. They had a 10-year contract. They did it after 8 years. They did it a little short, but you had like 6, 7, 8 years in this model to say, all right, we like this. We don't like this. Here's what we want to change. Now they're making changes incredibly rapidly. And I think you lose a little bit of traction and it opens you up when you move too fast, just like anything in life. When you start moving too fast, mistakes are much more prone to be made. And that results in a big, big problem. And eventually, once the toothpaste is out of the tube, you are not getting it back in there. We've seen that with name, image, and likeness. I'm fearful that maybe the college football playoff will be the next in line where things are just going to get out of control and there won't be any sort of fixing. In about 20 minutes, you will hear from Jayden Daniels yesterday. And something that I'm getting a little uncomfortable with on social media as it relates to Jayden Daniels. But if I'm sitting in for Kevin, we're going to do a little bit of daily news. So we got some daily news coming up next, including something that people are paying their real money for that you will not believe. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show with Dent Day sitting in for Kevin on the Team 980.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.